Of Krishna's explanations of different yoga processes. This chapter you can look at is divided into three sections. In the first instance, Arjuna asks Krishna, which is the more beneficial path, which is the better path? And is it the path of impersonal searching for the Supreme Absolute Truth, or is it the path of devotional service? And the particular word that Arjuna uses is yogam, yoga vittamaha. So this word, of course, is yoga, and vit means knowledge, and uttama means the supreme, the ultimate, the transcendental knowledge. So Arjuna is directly asking Krishna, which is the ultimate conception of yoga that will bring us to spiritual realization, to perfection. Because perfection very much is the theme of the Bhagavad Gita, how to attain perfection. Because Arjuna was not an ordinary, simple person, although in some sense he plays the part of a simple, ordinary person. But he was very advanced, a great warrior. He was considered the greatest warrior, even among the Pandavas themselves. He was considered the topmost. And so, therefore, he had reached the ultimate perfection, you could say, of his varnashram status, his what is called svadharma. Dharma means the essence of who he is. Sva means the personal. He had reached the topmost of his personal essence in being the topmost warrior of his class, of his family, and indeed of the entire world at the time. He had single-handedly defeated the Kuru armies in an incident prior to this in the Mahabharata, where he had taken on all the warriors of the Kurus, and he had defeated them personally, himself, one man. And so he had reached that stage, and yet he felt unfulfilled because he had not realized his perfection as a spiritually. So there's very important that we look at how Krishna explains to him the various yoga options, you might say, because at first he rejects the warrior, he rejects the fact that he's reached the pinnacle of Kshatriya Dharma and says, no, I know that this is not the perfection because I'm being asked to engage in horrible works. And so, therefore, I prefer the path of renunciation. I prefer to just give all this up. And so Krishna explains to him exactly the imperfections of his situation. And so Krishna goes through the various stages of yoga. And yoga is described as like a ladder. There are different rungs of the ladder. There is karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, meditation yoga, ashtanga yoga, the eightfold mystic path. There are these different paths, these different aspects of the paths of yoga that one can engage oneself in order to achieve perfection. And so Arjuna rejects these because he understands that these paths are very, very difficult. And he doesn't have much time. He has only the battlefield in front of him, and he either has to go or not go. And so Krishna has to explain to him these various paths of yoga. Now, what is interesting about this chapter, as I said, is in three divisions. First, having explained the various paths of yoga, and then having explained all his opulences in chapter 10, well, not all, but a variety of Krishna's different opulences, then Krishna displays his universal form. On the request of Arjuna, Krishna displays the universal form, which is such an overwhelming experience that Arjuna rejects this and says, no, I cannot accept this form of yours. It is too horrific. It is too horrendous. It is beyond what I can accomplish, what I can truly understand, what I can truly accept, being as I am in this material world. And so then he asks this question. So tell me, what is the Yoga Vittamaha? What is the supreme path? And the final verses, the final six verses of this chapter, six, seven verses, Krishna turns the tables somewhat. And instead of, in the previous chapters on karma yoga and dhyana yoga and meditation and so on, where Krishna says, the person who is engaged in karma yoga, he performs such and such sacrifices. The person who is engaged in meditational yoga, he has to find a place to sit, and he has to practice different asanas and breathing exercises and all these, and he has to withdraw his senses from the sense objects. And it's very explicit in a way that he's explaining how the yoga process is done. But in this bhakti yoga, Krishna sort of turns the tables and he says, look, these are the people who come to me. These are the people, from my point of view, that are attaining perfection. This matpriyaha, bhakta matpriyaha. So this is Krishna's view of the people who are performing yoga, what they're and how he perceives them. So just in the same way as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Swati Thakur, he once gave the instruction that don't try to see Krishna. Try to act in such a way that Krishna sees you. And that is the culmination of this verse, of this chapter, that is how we attain to perfection in this life, by having Krishna see us according to these different qualities. And so the first verses, Krishna categorically, he rejects the impersonal path. He says, kleshadikatarastesham. He uses this word klesha, even the sound of this word klesha. You know, it's very difficulty. You could just see, oh, this is just such a grind, you know. So this is the reality of these different, and it's in a sense an echo of previous verses where Krishna explains that bahunam janmanamante, gyanavan mam prapadyante, that after many, many births, gyanavan, one person who is perfected, jnana yoga, who is in perfect knowledge of Krishna, after many, many births, he surrenders to me. Samahatma sururlaba, that such a person is very rare. To attain perfection in this kind of yoga is very rare. Krishna has already explained this. And there's so many references that Krishna has in this 12th chapter to the previous verses, where there's one, mayarpita mano buddhir, that simply focus this, and this is from chapter 8, where Krishna says, mayarpita mano buddhir, with your intelligence, focus your mind upon me. And he repeats that line in this chapter also, focus your mind and just remember me. Abhyasa yoga yuktena, you know. And so all these, even Krishna says, and he repeats it a couple of times in this verse, going way back to chapter 2. In chapter 2, Krishna explains that the non-permanent happiness of the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, you know, and their appearance and disappearance in due course of time, are just like the winter and the summer seasons. One has to learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. And he repeats this dukkha, sukha dukkha da in the second chapter. And in this chapter, sukheshu dukheshu, again he repeats these elementary principles that Krishna is not looking at your great austerities and your penances and these artificial means of controlling the senses, but he's actually looking at you at how much devotion you're developing ultimately through these practices. And this is why, and many ways, we see that, and Prabhupada presents this, that bhakti yoga is the highest form of yoga. And this is very, in a way, confusing and elicits some doubt from those who are engaged in other forms of yoga, because in the other forms of yoga, things are very difficult to do. But in bhakti yoga, things are very easy to do. You simply chant, dance, you take prasadam, but you develop this love for Krishna. And in a sense, it's very easy. So how is it that the yogas that are very difficult are lesser forms of yoga, you might say, than bhakti yoga? And this is, it's just in the same way as one takes, for example, scientific research into different things. You know, the scientists, they try so hard to explain different material aspects of life, how we digest. Just take the body as an example, how we digest, how we eat, different foods, the different things that they would have. But nowhere in their research do you find how much are people actually enjoying. How is their desire being generated through the way that they perform the different actions of their lives? They explain the physical processes to some degree, but by and large, they cannot explain. For example, there's the example of music. When we hear tunes that we like or like that, there's a sense of enjoyment, there's a sense of relish, there's a sense of taste. And this is not something that is easily explainable. Why is one person's taste rap music and another person's taste is classical music? What is the difference? Why? Why do they have the same physical makeup, these people? Why? Because there is a certain rasa, there is a certain mellow, there is a certain desire that people have to enjoy different varieties of things. So in the same way, we understand that developing the desire and developing the enjoyment to understand Krishna, to know Krishna, and to ultimately to serve Krishna, that is the highest enjoyment. As we can see from the bus tour, this was such a wonderful example, cooking pakoras in the dark with the flashlight in your mouth. This is not something most people would consider pleasurable. And yet, this devotee, he just understood that I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm doing this for Krishna's devotees. I'm doing this to spread Krishna consciousness to all these people who will really relish and really enjoy this prasadam and really have a wonderful, fulfilling sense of what it is to be Krishna conscious and how it is to develop this love for Krishna. So this is bhakti yoga. And we understand so many times, I'm reminded of it was just mentioned in class the other day, the song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he, Shuddha Bhakata song, where he explains all these different elements of Krishna consciousness. You know, how when I hear the mridanga and I hear the kirtan of Lord Chaitanya, I just feel such bliss in my heart. You know, this is actually bhakti yoga. This is the ultimate perfection of yoga. And so this is why bhakti yoga is the topmost, because it's not dependent simply on logic and reason. Although logic and reason are there, we accept logic, we accept reason. We understand that without logic and without reason, it is simply fanaticism. But logic and reason in and of themselves are not enough. It's just like the argument of the scientists. Their logic and their reason is not enough. They try to create, they're just popularizing it now, when the theory of everything. They want to have the one formula that explains the universe. See, they want to encapsulate it. So they're very enamored of Einstein. Einstein developed this formula E equals mc squared, you know, to explain the relationship between energy and matter, and how it work and how it can be measured scientifically. So in the same way, they want to measure and encapsulate Krishna, the creation, the theory of everything into one little formula, and that will be the success of their life. And what is the result? The result is that the person who's advocating this theory of everything is an atheist. It's so ridiculous that, you know, how is it? I mean, even on a very simplistic level, I always think back to childhood, the conundrum of childhood. What came first, the chicken or the egg? You know? So they say it's by evolution. Well, which one evolved first? Did the chicken evolve first or did the egg evolve first? Has to be one or the other, right? And this is a simple logic. And yet they're rejecting the fact that there has to be an ultimate, you know, the buck stops here. There is a generator of this universe, of this material energy that is beyond this material. There is to be a cause of all causes. Even in Catholicism, Roman Catholics, St. Thomas Aquinas, he was the proponent of this. He said that ultimately, whatever is the ultimate cause, that is God. You have to accept that there has to be an ultimate cause of the universe. And therefore, there is a God. And so that is the basis of their philosophical idea of God in the Roman Catholic Church. So we understand as theists that ultimately there has to be a cause. And to say that it is the most illogical thing to be an atheist and to say that something is coming from nothing, when everything in this material world has a cause. Everything. So therefore, it's how far back do you have to go? Well, they try the Big Bang, or they try some other theory, or they try the singularity, or whatever theoretical construct they come up with. And it's all based on mathematics. It's all based on logic. It's all based on reason. But we understand that logic and reason simply are not enough to explain human experience and to attain perfection. So we have, of course, our own mathematical transcendental formula for the cause and the result of this universe, and it is quite simple. It is the Maha Mantra. It is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by the chanting of this mantra, then we attain to some understanding of the perfection of life, to some understanding of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His name is non-different. This chapter also, in one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada describes that when the pure devotee chants, Krishna is dancing on his tongue. He perceives that. It is his reality. And therefore, Kirtaniya Sada Hari, he is always chanting that holy name. So I encourage everyone to do that, and we wish all blessings to the bus tour, that they have a successful tour of Mexico. And thank you very much for your attention. If there are any questions, Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu. I think it's not on. Is it on? Did you switch it on? Oh. Yeah, you have to hold it close.
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, yes.
So, yeah, you were asking that question. Do processes are more difficult, brings less results, and what do you guys simpler and brings better results?
Right. Yes.
Extending the potency of the process many times over. Whereas other processes, they're quite individualistic.
Yes.
Hatha Yoga, so that's one thing that is particular to our process, is congregational.
Yeah.
And it increases Ananda Muni Mardana.
That community, and well, you know, in previous ages, it is true that temple worship as a path of yoga, that temple worship as a path of yoga was also a communal and the path of sacrifices, performing big yagyas. These were also congregational and communal and would encompass the entire society. All the people would become involved in these practices. So in that sense, yes. However, in the current age, this chanting of the holy name is the only way that is really possible to be performed on a mass scale in the same way as those were in previous times. Yeah, that's good. That was a good question. Thank you very much, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, could you bring me?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
I have a scenario question. I just made up a scenario. There are two young devotees who just came to the temple, and they're attracted to a Krishna consciousness. And there's one devotee who always likes to chant. He's sitting in the temple, and is chanting with a lot of devotion. And there's another devotee who is working back in the kitchen, cleaning the dishes with lots of devotion. I'm thinking he's doing a lot of devotional service there. Now, you found out about these two devotees, one who is sitting here and is chanting with a lot of devotion, and there's another devotee in the kitchen who is washing the dishes with lots of devotion, but he chants few rounds, but he's not chanting as many rounds as the devotee in the temple room. How do you talk to these two devotees about their advancement?
It's interesting that this 12th chapter does deal with that. And in this 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita and Bhakti Yoga, Krishna describes, again, the different levels. That first level, highest level, is one who can simply absorb himself in the holy name, simply absorb himself in thoughts of Krishna without cessation 24 hours a day. And then Krishna says, if you can't do that, then you should follow the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga under the instruction of a spiritual master. So that is the next level. And then, if you can't do that, Krishna says, then you should work giving up all the fruits of your activities. And if you can't do that, then, or giving up the fruits of your activities to me, Krishna says, but if you can't give up the fruits to Krishna, at least you should just give up the fruits. You should work, because sometimes people are in a situation where they can't, whether it's due to a corporate situation or something like that, they can't give up the fruits to Krishna because it's not legal or something is there. But at least they just give up the fruits. And maybe they give to charity. Prabhupada explains that sometimes in this mood, people establish hospitals or other charitable works like that. And then Krishna says, but if you can't do that, if you can't give up the fruits, then at least you should cultivate knowledge. Because by cultivating knowledge, then gradually you will come to the point where you'll understand. So in reply to, if I would assume that if both devotees are in the temple, they're somewhat on the path, they're somewhat under the instruction of a spiritual master. And in that instance, where both are under the instruction of a spiritual master, Krishna says, actually in this chapter, that I don't see any difference between them. I just see, you know, how much they're surrendered to me, how much they're willing to surrender, you know, their situation. So, in that sense, they would be equal. So, yes, that's how Krishna sees these things. See, if we see how Krishna sees, then, you know, there's less confusion. And that's why this Bhakti Yoga chapter is the ultimate chapter of yoga. You can look at this as saying this is the ultimate yoga. And then, although there are still six more chapters to come, as basically the six chapters that follow, apart from the grand finale in the 18th chapter, they're just like basically a mopping up operation. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how the soul exists within the field of knowledge, nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. I'm going to explain to you the divisions of faith between the divine and the demoniac. I'm going to explain to you the three modes of material nature. I'm going to explain those things to you. But the actual path of yoga, this is the wrap-up of how yoga works, and so this is the ultimate. And then, of course, at the end, Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja, that give up all varieties of dharma and just surrender to me. So that's this whole idea of the different rungs of the ladder of devotional service, of yoga, and different types of yoga, this is very much a feature of these, what we would call the 18 discourses of the Bhagavad Gita. Anyone? Thank you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada.